Titles appear. Parts and Labor presents. In association with Falero House Productions, Film 50, Mutresa Movies, and RT Features. Now protruding from a pair of blue cotton shorts, a man's legs intertwine with beige sheets on a bed. A white-haired man lies awake next to the sleeping dark-haired bearded man in blue shorts. Wearing a pair of light cotton pajama bottoms, the elderly white-haired man rises from the bed and removes his t-shirt as he exits the room. Viewed through a clear plastic shower curtain, the man stands with his head under the falling water. Bringing his hands to his face, the man rubs the water from his eyes and beard. He turns and exits the shower. The elderly man grabs a blue cabled towel and wipes his face. In the bedroom, the dark-haired man slips on a blue and white pinstripe shirt with a white collar and buttons it. He gives a brief smile as the white-haired man enters the room. Two nude drawings hang on the wall above the bed. The white-haired man searches for something.
Glasses. I can't find my glasses.
He leaves the room.
Not today. Please, God, not today.
In another room, the white-haired man continues his search. He walks out past two women who dust and tidy up.
Has anybody seen my glasses?
The young woman hands him the glasses.
You have the list?
It's in the kitchen.
Wearing a purple bow tie, Ben walks past a painting of a dark-skinned teen staring at us, now in the kitchen.
I think 40 will cover it.
Maybe you can send Eugenia to the market.
Okay.
How's the lasagna?
I just put it in.
Oh, it looks delicious.
Oh, let me see.
Sweetie, do you have any cash? No.
It's not too early to put it in, is it?
I know what I'm doing. Close the door and go.
So I've had a look.
You look fantastic, both of you.
It's almost 11. George.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you.
I need cash for Eugenia.
Yeah. You smell good, too.
Thank you.
Let's go. Thank you, Zlatan.
Yeah, we're back about 1:30.
Yeah, have you got the papers?
Yes, I've got the papers, Vera Vague. Let's go.
The couple leaves. A fair-haired Zlata arranges a vase of pink and orange flowers. Now the two men walk down a city sidewalk.
Oh, they're awful, George.
Yeah, don't worry, we'll still be okay, don't worry.
The well-dressed men step into the street. Ben raises his hand in the air, but quickly lowers it again.
We might have better luck on 6, come on.
With a confused expression, Ben looks in the other direction. He turns and jogs across the street after George.
Wait, George.
George stops and looks back.
I want to get all sweaty.
At a walk, Ben joins his partner on the curb.
You're fine, you're fine.
They head off past some brownstones.
We can't just wander. Yes,
now they stand in a garden.
We are gathered here today in the presence of these witnesses with the purpose of uniting in matrimony George Esteban Garea, Benjamin Arthur Hull.
They beam at each other.
And for everybody who's here, I'd like to ask you to try to stop thinking about your jobs, your marriage, your schoolwork, what you have to do tomorrow, what you forgot to do today. And let us focus all of our energies and all of our love on these two men here, George and Ben. So I'd like to ask of you if you would commit to honor and support these two individuals and their love and their life and in their marriage together.
Yes!
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 Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
There's a question that I have to ask, and it may seem obvious, the answer, but it's still a very important question. Are you both making this decision of your own free will?
Smiling, Ben and George face each other.
Yes.
Yes.
At Ben and George's apartment, a red-haired woman carries a tray.
What do you think? No, no, look, it's so long. Spasiba, Inspiratia, Pajalsta, away. Hey, would you like a cookie? Excuse me. What do you think? I made them.
You made them for real, sure.
She approaches a bearded man and a handsome, taller man. Ben sits next to George at a piano.
Boy, George, you know it takes a lot of kissing to make a romance sweet.
needs a lot of loving to make my life complete. And it takes a lot of husband.
That's me he's talking about.
To knock me on my feet. And baby, you've got what it takes.
Your part, Jen. It's the sexy part.
Oh, yeah.
Ted scratches Roberto's bearded chin.
Ooh, you know, you got just what it takes. More than an effort to stay away from you. And it takes more than a lifetime to prove that I'll be true. And it takes somebody special to make us say we do. And baby, you've got what it takes.
Okay, here we
take it home now. And baby, you've got what it takes.
Not just in the kitchen.
Woo, baby, you've got what it takes.
Ben and George wrap their arms around each other and kiss passionately. A dark-haired woman raises her glass.
Oh, when I met my husband, Elliot here, he was walking around with a camera, making the most amazing videos with people he just met on the street, creating scenes out of ordinary situations. I was just finishing my first novel, and I immediately thought we'd make a great pair. Two independent spirits committed to our art. So we started to go out, and he said that he wanted me to meet his Uncle Ben. I said, well, why your uncle? And Elliot said that since his mother had passed away, his uncle was his favorite person in his family.
Thank you, Elliot.
Not including siblings, Mindy.
Mindy rolls her eyes.
So we came here one night. You guys had just moved into this apartment, and George had prepared us a delicious spaghetti bolognese. We drank wine, and we sang, and we drank some more, and it was just wonderful. And when we left, Elliot said to me, I wanted you to meet the two of them because they've been together for more than 20 years. So I understood. Oh my, I'm going to cry. I understood that he was proposing to me because you guys, your love, your dedication, your commitment to each other are an example to be followed. May this love, may this marriage last forever and beyond. To Ben and George.
Thank you, Kate.
And to Petra!
Petra!
Petra Monquette!
Kate and Elliot kiss and the newlyweds do the same. A teen boy grins. In an auditorium, George conducts a choir of teenagers on a stage. At the back of the auditorium, an elderly priest watches with a stern expression. He hangs his head and leaves. In an office, the priest reads from a piece of paper. George sits facing the clergyman.
All who serve in the archdiocese should believe in God, support belief in Jesus Christ, engage in prayer, respect ecclesiastical authority, not take a public position contrary to the Catholic Church.
Are you going to read me the whole witness statement, Father?
The Christian witness statement, George. You signed it when you took this job.
How long have we known each other, Father?
The priest averts his gaze.
12 years. 12 years.
You have to understand that...
Understand what?
That day when you announced you were getting married... at the spring semester meeting.
Now, you've all known this whole time that Ben and I have been living together.
Word got out to the archdiocese. Then someone showed pictures to the bishop of you and Ben in Petra. On Facebook, of all places.
I wouldn't have done anything any differently.
I'm not saying you should have, George. But the bishop wasn't happy.
And what about the students? I've known them since they were kids, and their parents. They've been to my house, they've played on my piano, they've sung with Ben and me.
The decision is effective immediately.
On the wall behind George, a sign reads, St. Grace Academy. George grabs his suit jacket from the back of a chair and folds it over his arm.
George, let's pray.
Briefcase in hand, he glares at the priest.
It's important that you don't question your faith.
Thank you very much, Father. I still believe in Jesus Christ as my Savior, and that won't change, but at this moment, I think I'd like to pray on my own.
He lingers a moment before he opens the door and leaves. At the apartment, Ben and George meet with Mindy, Kate, Roberto, Ted, and the red-haired woman.
Well, let's not forget that the real estate agent gets a first-month commission. The co-op board also gets a month, plus they charge a 5% administration fee.
A month? That's ridiculous. Why do they have to charge an administration fee?
They just want to discourage rentals in the building.
It's just so hard to find a condo in Manhattan.
It's not true anymore.
Well, anyway, I'm just trying to explain why renting doesn't help us, because...
You've been to my house, right? You know how much my real estate taxes are? $3,000. That's for the whole year.
It's Poughkeepsie, Mindy. Renting would leave us owing about $1,000 a month. You know, if we find a studio for, say, $1,500, and that's very hard. I mean, we're starting each month at $3,000.
And you can't afford that?
Well, with my private lessons and Ben's pension.
Why did you guys have to go on such a fancy honeymoon?
Mindy, it's none of your business.
Of course it is, otherwise I wouldn't be here.
Shh, quiet.
I'm just saying, there's nothing wrong with Provincetown.
Elliot arrives.
Here, have a seat.
Everything okay?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk to you.
Elliot sits down next to Kate.
Now, we invited you all here today because, well, your family.
Are you telling us you're getting divorced already?
That's what I thought, too.
No.
Sitting on the piano bench, George rubs his bearded chin.
We have to sell the apartment. And we found a buyer already. So pretty soon, we're going to have to move out. Now, it won't be long before I get another job. And shouldn't be long before we find another apartment. But in the meantime...
It's just a transition phase. Probably just... a week or two.
Ben sits down in the leather chair next to his husband. George takes his hand.
We need a place to stay.
Wait a minute. Did I miss something here?
These last weeks have been tough on us, Elliot. Losing the job, looking for health insurance. We need a breather.
Yeah, believe me, moving out of here is the last thing we want to do.
It's only temporary. We'll find a new place. Very soon.
Now the visitors leave.
Let's go, Elliot. Stay
positive, Ben.
Thanks for the beer.
I love you guys. I'll call you during the week.
Ted and Roberto lead the group to a lower landing.
We're right here.
The two cops stop at an apartment door as the others descend.
Bye, Mom.
I feel bad that I can't help out, but you guys have seen my apartment.
It's okay. They can stay with me for as long as it's necessary.
Well, I just had a feeling that they were hoping they could stay with one of us here in the city. Didn't you see the look on their faces?
What are you talking about?
I'm saying they don't want to go live upstate. George and Ben, country boys, all of a sudden, I just can't see
it. It's temporary.
Honey's right. Maybe there's something that we can do.
I thought we had figured it all out already.
Mindy, shh. Why are we even talking about this? I'm the only one with the extra bedroom.
No, it's not about that, Mindy. It's Poughkeepsie.
When was the last time you were there?
That doesn't matter. George has his private students here, okay? Ben has his galleries.
And they'll need to start looking for a new apartment.
It just doesn't make sense for them to go live 2.5 hours away.
It's an hour and a half, actually.
Nah, by bus, it's not.
By car.
They don't drive.
They can very well learn how to.
Are you really serious, Mindy?
Shut the fuck up, honey. You're not even family, so you don't get to decide anything.
Okay, shh. They're right upstairs, you guys.
Since we're here, why don't we step inside my apartment for a minute?
Elliot, let's find myself some work to do today.
Come on, guys.
It's almost 7 o'clock.
Please.
Elliot and Kate follow the others inside. In Ben and George's small kitchen, the married men clean up. George sets a cutting board on the counter in front of Ben and gazes at the older man. George kisses his husband on the cheek. He rubs his hand over Ben's back, then grabs a plastic baggie and leaves. Ben washes the cutting board in the sink, then rinses it off and shakes it. George carries a trash bag through the apartment. He steps into the hallway and closes the door behind him. Walking down the stairs, George passes the two cops' apartment. He stops on the landing and walks over. Standing with his ear toward the apartment door, George closes his eyes. He shakes his head. With a downcast gaze, George continues down the stairs. Fade to black. In the morning, our view passes the Soldiers and Sailors Arch. The dark statues at the top of the square concrete structure loom over traffic lights below. Now we move past the Brooklyn Museum, where banners hang between the building's front pillars. Viewed through scattered trees in a park, a fountain spurts high arches of water over a statue. In a bright living room, Elliot sits on a couch with a phone to his ear.
So why don't you tell me how and where we are going to accommodate a crowd this size?
The teen boy walks in.
No, that's because you told me we had a permit.
Dad, can you just talk for a second?
Oh, James, hold on.
So, the geography project that I have to do?
No, help me out.
Sustainable development.
Yes.
Okay, so they're painting Vlad's house, so I told him he can come here.
No. It was from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. That's what I requested.
Dad.
Please, hold on.
Yeah, well, they're painting Vlad's house right now, so I told him he can come here to work on it. And are you going to be in the living room all day?
Joey, this is really important. Please,
it's quick. He's on his way here.
I understand. I'm sorry, son. James, you know as well as I do, 2 hours.
Joey goes to the front door.
We can't close the street until 9. The crew's not going to be ready until 11.
It's my friend.
Eugenia presses the entry button. A curly-haired boy walks in.
What's up? I found a book on the Amazon rainforest. Some really cool pictures with naked natives and everything.
Vlad sets down his backpack and skateboard.
Dad is home?
Yeah.
Let's go to your room.
No, I got to talk to my mom first.
Okay.
Vlad notices Eugenia.
Can I get some water?
Yeah, sure.
Joey leaves. At a counter, Eugenia dries silverware. Vlad approaches and grabs a glass.
Oh, hello.
I'm Vlad.
My name is Eugenia. I work for Joey's parents.
Are you Russian?
Yes.
Vlad holds out his hand.
Приятно познакомиться.
Eugenia shakes it.
Очень приятно.
In a bedroom.
We might go to the library.
On the bed, Kate writes.
But isn't Vlad here?
Yeah, I told you.
So then why don't you just work here?
Kate shrugs. With folded arms, Joey glances off, then shoots his mom a look. Kate grins.
What?
Now Joey, Kate, and Vlad file into another bedroom.
I'll just wake him gently.
You do it.
On the bottom bunk of a bed, Ben sleeps shirtless with an open book resting on his stomach.
Joey.
Kate leans down and taps the old man's knee.
Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben, I'm so sorry to wake you.
Ben opens his eyes.
Hi. Joey has something that he needs to ask you.
Mom.
Sluggishly, Ben looks up as Joey approaches.
Hi, Uncle Ben.
Hey.
Hi. My friend, Vlad, is here.
Ben sits
and
up.
We need to work on a school presentation, and there's nowhere else for us to study.
Who?
Vlad steps closer and gives a short wave.
Oh, Vlad.
Smiling, Ben holds out a hand.
Good to meet you. Heard a lot about you.
Hi, Uncle Ben.
They shake hands.
Sorry, I
I guess I've fallen asleep. What time is it?
Kate checks her watch.
It's 2.
Ben looks to Vlad, who takes out his phone.
2:05.
So what's this presentation you're working on?
In Ted and Roberto's apartment.
See, this little box over there connects directly to our Netflix account, our iTunes, our YouTube. Here, hang on, watch. Let me show you.
Ted lifts a thin remote.
Oh, have you seen this?
No, what is that?
You have never seen this?
George shakes his head.
It's Game of Thrones.
Ted presses the remote.
Oh, look. They will stand until they drop. Daenerys Targaryen.
I love her.
She's so regal.
Yeah, I can see that.
She's shopping for an army in Slaver's Bay.
Hey, it's quite sexy, isn't it, the whole thing? I could do with one of those slaves myself. Why does she have to have a whole army of them?
Because she's a princess who's been living in exile, who's planning on coming back to the Seven Kingdoms. She needs an army. And her brother was... No, I'm not even going to tell you because you are going to watch it with me.
Well,
tengo hambre.
Roberto walks in with another cop.
Hey, George, you met my friend Doreen, right?
Doreen.
Hey.
George stands and smiles as Doreen walks over to the couch.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I need help in the kitchen.
They sit.
Just 2 minutes, babe.
Doreen pats George's leg.
So how your two new daddies treating you?
Oh, I can't complain.
I've always liked this couch. I'm taking good naps here.
It's a good bed, too.
If I drink too much, maybe I'll sleep here with you tonight.
In Elliot's apartment, Ben eats.
Ours is on mixed farming, which is when a farmer manages a mix of different crops and animals.
So why is that eco-friendly?
Well, nobody says eco-friendly anymore.
Isn't it eco-efficient now?
Sustainable.
The family sits around the table.
Sustainable agriculture.
So how is mixed farming sustainable then?
Well, the crop residues are used as food for the animals, and the excrements from the animals is used as a nutrient for the crop.
Joey, your uncle's still eating.
Oh, sorry.
In the cop's apartment, George talks on a phone.
Yeah, well, they're only just now deciding to have dinner.
He stands near the front door.
Now look, I've got a student first thing in the morning.
A woman walks in with a baby, waving at George. She puts a finger to her lips as she passes into the other room.
Linda, hey!
I believe it. Someone's just turned up with a bloody baby.
Holding the baby, Linda sits on the couch with Roberto and Doreen.
No, I went to the diner, got some matzo ball soup.
In Elliot's apartment, Ben sits alone at a table.
I made my beef stew tonight.
He holds a phone.
Yeah, I think they did. They ate the whole thing. But they didn't say anything. No, they're very nice. But sometimes, when you live with people, you know them better than you care to, that's all.
Ben looks down.
I miss you, too.
Now George sits in an office.
Yeah, well, this is what...
He opens a large file.
Well, I don't quite understand. Why is it that we're only seeing $17,535 in profit?
Well, to start with, you have to take into account the 1% New York City transfer tax, the 4% New York State tax, plus 6% to me. That's $60,000 right there.
Yes, I understand all of that, but according to my calculations, that should still leave...
Don't forget, your co-op also has a flip tax of 25% on whatever profit you make if you sell before 5 years.
It is 5 years. I mean, it's been 5 years. We bought in 2007, it's now 2013.
But Mr. Gurea, you didn't actually close until January, if you remember. So that's 2008. And they go by the calendar year. So you would actually have to sell in 2014 to avoid the flip tax.
Yeah, this is really like something out of Kafka.
Look at it this way. You've lived in a nice apartment for 20 years. Nearly five of that, as an owner. And you've sold it at a profit. You're getting $17,535, which is all yours.
George tucks a bag under his arm.
Thank you.
At a desk in her apartment, Kate types on a laptop.
Did I tell you my gallerist friend is a big fan of yours?
She looks back over her shoulder.
Who? A fan of mine?
Yeah, she loves your book.
Kate resumes typing, then sits on the couch.
I need some tea. You want some?
Mm-hmm. I would love some. Thank you.
Ben stands.
You remember her, right?
Who?
Ada, my gallerist friend.
On the Lower East Side, yes. I think that I met her.
Tall blonde. Swedish.
Yes, I met her.
Last week I stopped by the gallery and there she was reading your book. I screamed. I absolutely screamed.
With clasped hands, Kate grins.
And she had no idea that you were my niece.
Mm-hmm. Kate's smile fades and she blinks her eyes. Later, Kate types with a slack jaw.
You know my favorite story of yours? The one about the old high school friend who shows up at the diner. She sees him.
On the couch, Ben furrows his brow and takes off his glasses.
And I can't remember why she can't be sure it's her friend.
Kate scratches her forehead.
The worst part of getting old is memory. It only gets worse with time, let me tell you.
She turns in her chair to face him.
She can't see him because he's outside and it's snowing.
Oh, right. He's in the car, right?
She nods.
She's not really sure that it's him.
She turns away.
Because of the blizzard.
Right.
Ben raises a steamy cup.
So beautiful, Kate, really. Just wonderful writing.
Kate grins.
Oh, hot.
Kate lifts her own mug and blows before taking a sip.
Which one is your favorite?
Kate shakes her head.
I don't have a favorite.
Oh, it's like me with my painting. I don't have a favorite either. George does. He loves those two nudes that hang in the bedroom. That used to hang in the bedroom. I gave those to him for his
40th. Yes, I remember. I love those too. Maybe you could start a new painting soon.
It's the hardest thing, Kate, to be honest with you. I brought all my stuff here, but...
What?
Well, it's just that I can't really work if there's someone else around. I can't concentrate, you know?
At her desk, Kate looks between Ben and her laptop and puts a hand to her face. In the bathroom, Elliot stands shirtless, revealing an elaborate, colorful tattoo on his shoulder and upper arm. He splashes water on his face and stares forward. In bed, Kate reads next to a table lamp. Elliot sits heavily on the bed and meets his wife's gaze. He rubs her leg.
How did it go?
Grinning, Elliot leans over and kisses her on the cheek.
Better than we could have ever expected.
Kate smiles.
I knew it.
Scooting under the blankets, Elliot settles onto his side, facing away from Kate.
I called you to see if you're coming home for dinner.
You did?
Yes. I left a message.
Sorry, baby. I didn't have a moment to check my messages.
That busy?
Yeah. We got it on the can.
That's great.
I'm exhausted.
Elliot turns to lay on his other side facing Kate. He adjusts his pillow and puts an arm across his wife.
Sleep, baby.
He pats her.
Sleep.
Kate looks at him, then back to her book. Squinting, Elliot studies his wife.
Kate.
She closes her book.
Unlike you, I didn't have a very productive day.
Was it Joey?
Joey? No, Joey hardly said two words to me today, but if you were around more, you'd see that that's just the norm.
He looks to the ceiling.
Is it neighbors again?
No, Elliot, it's your uncle. When they're playing loud music, it's easy to tell them to turn it down. But when it's Uncle Ben chatting away, it's a lot harder to tell him to shut up.
Wow.
Kate opens, then shuts her book. Now Ben and George wait in an office.
Mr. Barea?
Yes, that's me. This is Mr. Hull. I'd like him to come with me.
Okay.
Now they sit in the woman's office.
These apartments are city-sponsored and are currently accepting applications. Tenants are selected by a lottery, but first you need to meet the criteria for the specific development, and each one has its own. Sorry, I only have one.
No, we can share.
Now, the city itself does not rent the apartments, so if you are selected, this would be a private real estate transaction between yourselves and the real estate developer. You understand? You need to contact the developer or the marketing agent directly. You'll see phone numbers and other info in this list I just gave you.
I have a question. We're married, so we'll be applying together.
Okay.
George smiles at Ben.
For example, this one-bedroom property in Fort Greene, Wollongong, $511 monthly rental, $19,509 minimum earnings figure. Maximum is $23,240. The minimum earning figure, would that be for both of us?
Yes, both together.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure about that.
And anything you find there that's interesting, you need to first check to see that you meet the criteria. That's all I have for now.
Well, sounds like a good start.
Eyes wide, George's gaze rises to meet Ben's. George turns toward the agent.
Thanks very much.
He grabs his briefcase and the two men rise.
Sir, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
How old are you?
71.
Because you might want to try the DFTA as well.
DFTA?
The Department for the Aging.
And they have a whole department just for us. Isn't that encouraging?
They keep a list of affordable housing for senior citizens. There's usually a waiting list, but it's worth a try.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks very much.
George and Ben shake the woman's hand, then leave. On a rooftop, Vlad holds his skateboard and leans against a half wall. A water tower and the partially obscured New York skyline stand behind him. Sitting in a chair with a canvas on his lap, Ben sketches the boy. An easel stands nearby. A rusted door opens behind Ben. Joey steps out onto the roof. He walks over to Ben and glances at the old man's canvas. Joey looks at his friend and spreads his arms.
What the fuck, Vlad?
I'm posing for your uncle's new masterpiece.
That's so gay.
People have been modeling for painters for centuries now, Joe. All kinds of people.
He doesn't mean homosexual, Uncle Ben. You just mean stupid.
Don't worry, Vlad. Joey and I understand each other.
Not even good artist, anyway.
Joey heads for the door.
Joey.
What?
I know you don't mean that.
Yeah, I do. If you were, you wouldn't be sleeping on a bunk bed in your nephew's house.
Downstairs, Kate sits at the kitchen table, writing in a notebook as Joey enters.
Did you find him?
Fucking rooftop with Uncle Ben.
Watch the language.
I'm going out.
And Vlad?
Uncle Ben is making him pose for a painting.
He's what?
You heard me.
Joey, it was my idea for Ben to take the painting to the
roof. All right,
because
I gotta
go. To work here.
Kate wears a strained expression. Ben and Vlad enter the stairwell leading from the roof. The curly-haired teen catches his skateboard in the door. He kicks it free.
You okay there?
Yeah, we're good.
They head down the stairs. Back in the kitchen, Kate types on a laptop. Vlad enters, carrying his skateboard. The dark-haired woman turns to the teen.
Vlad.
The boy glances at her and then walks over to the sink.
What were you doing up there?
I was helping Uncle Ben with his painting.
Aren't you supposed to be studying biology?
It's going to be all about this book on seasons and migrations, and I know the book pretty well.
Mm-hmm. But if you flunk that test and your mother calls tomorrow, then I'm going to tell her that you're studying or that you're playing.
I don't flunk. Uncle Ben, where should I leave this?
Just put it on the table. I'll take care of it.
You know, when you're here, you're my responsibility. So if you're supposed to be studying, then you should be doing that and not posing on the roof.
Where is Joey?
He went to the library.
I guess I'll go meet him there.
It's a good idea. Do you want to take anything with you?
No, it's okay.
An apple? No?
Thank you, Mrs. Gale.
Vlad grabs his bag and turns to the bedroom.
See you later, Uncle Ben.
Goodbye, Vlad.
Goodbye.
Bye, Vlad.
Ben enters carrying brushes and paint thinner.
Joey got very upset. He called Vlad gay in quite an offensive fashion.
Kids have expanded the meaning of gay beyond sexual orientation, so don't get offended.
I didn't. I guess it just means stupid now.
He pours paint thinner into a glass.
Yes, yes, I think that you're right about that.
I don't know if Joey felt left out or... I don't know what in the world was going through his mind.
No. He's a teenager, and is it really appropriate to be using Joey's friend as a model?
Kate carries her things out of the room. The white-haired man watches her go, then stares off. Now Kate lies on her bed with a phone pressed to her ear.
Mindy, it's Kate. I'm okay.
How's Joey?
Oh, he's fine. How are you?
Everything's great. Amazing, actually. Yes. I went to see this chromotherapist up in Kingston. What?
Chromotherapy.
And you're kidding.
No. The guy talks to you for like 15 minutes, and then he floats his hand all over your body to feel whatever kind of energy you're missing, physical... lights to restore your balance. I was just taking a nap under a greenish light he gave me.
Mindy lights a cigarette.
He wouldn't believe it, but I feel like I am a different person.
That's great. Good for you. I am trying to work with a house full of people, and believe me, it hasn't been easy.
Kate
said I would take them.
Yeah, I just wanted to be sure if...
In case they don't find a place...
So sad.
I really feel terrible about it.
The problem is Elliot is never
around, so I wind up having to take care of all of his problems. Yes? Hold on a second. Hi, Ben.
I didn't want to interrupt.
No.
I wanted to talk to you about earlier.
It's not... No, it's fine.
You sure?
Yes. I'm talking to Mindy. She wants to know when you're going to visit her in Poughkeepsie.
Well, send her my love. We can talk tomorrow.
Wearing a bathrobe and holding a towel, Ben exits the room and shuts the door behind him. With a worried expression on his face, he turns and heads off. Now carrying his briefcase, George trudges up the stairs toward Roberto and Ted's apartment. He places a key in the door.
Wait, where am I flying? Explain the plot.
You're in a big spherical.
Yep.
There's a big opening at the top.
Yep.
You're just going to go...
Inside, the cops sit around a table with a group of friends playing a game. George passes through unnoticed.
Plus 18.
What?
You can't have plus 18. There's
what?
No way.
Why are you cheating?
No, I'm sorry. It's down here.
George opens the microwave.
Here is the entire story.
He reaches in and pulls out a plastic container. At the table, Ted wears a helmet.
I will describe it to you. Okay. As your eyes begin to... get used to, what's that word? Get used to
luminosity.
George stands in the kitchen eating from a small bowl.
No, and you get used to, you acclimate, or.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So you start to acclimate. Okay. Actually, you can start to see. And
what you see is this ginormous tree.
Underground?
Yes.
You've never seen an underground tree?
Well, because...
well, you about to.
Okay, so this tree...
George leans against the counter, a weary expression on his face.
Giant clown.
He walks over to the front door and opens it just as another man approaches it.
George, you do not want to go out there, my friend. It's really coming down. I'll be fine.
George leaves. At Elliot's apartment, Ben eats dinner at the table.
Is he old enough to enjoy the Louvre?
He's obsessed with the French Revolution.
Well, I know, but you don't have to go to Paris to learn about the guillotine.
There's a group of 8 boys and girls, and they need 2 more in order to get the discount.
Is Vlad going?
Yes.
Of course.
Of course.
How much is it going to cost?
It's $1,800. Hotel included.
Oh, damn. Speak of the devil.
Who's that?
Well, it's 10 o'clock. It must be Vlad.
Who is it?
George.
Taking off his glasses, Ben stands up and walks over to the windowed door. He opens it. Rain-drenched, George enters and starts to cry. Ben wraps his arms around him. The two men cling to each other tightly.
I'm sorry.
Kate and Elliot stand at the counter and watch them.
Sorry. Don't be silly. Now stop this.
Ben places his hand on the back of his husband's neck and holds him. Ben presses his lips to George's shoulder. Kate looks away and heads out of the room, glancing at Elliot as she goes. He follows her. Now Elliot leans against Joey's desk.
Why can't he sleep on the couch?
Because Joey. Please, son.
The teen leans his head on his hand. His father pats his shoulder, then leaves. Now Kate sits up in bed reading a newspaper. She sets it down. Elliot lies beside her, sleeping. She stares off. Her worried gaze falls on her husband. Joey sleeps on the couch in the living room. The teen shifts and rolls over. Ben lies awake in Joey's bottom bunk.
I talked to the principal there at PS 216. Very nice, smart guy. I think he really wants to bring back the music program.
Do they have the budget for it?
Well, not right now. But he seems capable of raising the money. You know, he's got a very nice, attractive personality.
Oh, that doesn't really help us that much right now, does it?
Well, let me finish. He never let me finish.
They don't have a job for you. Is that the end of it?
No, it's not. But you're such a pessimist.
Just being realistic.
Can I finish?
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Anyway, they've got lots of different kids there. White kids, black kids, Latinos, a few Asian kids. Oh, there was this really cute little girl. I think she's from the Philippines. She played Frère Jacques for me on her flute.
George, why don't you come down here where I can hear you better?
It's a bunk bed.
So?
Well, you told me Joey's losing his patience with you. Can you imagine if you broke his bed trying to shag your husband?
I have missed having your body next to mine too much to have it denied to me for reasons of bad engineering.
George's smile fades.
Well, don't blame me if this whole thing falls apart.
He sits up and shimmies down the small metal ladder. Ben holds the comforter open. George slides into the narrow bed next to him, and Ben covers him with the blanket. They wrap their arms around each other. The two men caress each other's faces, gazing deeply into one another's eyes. George leans in and kisses Ben. He strokes his white-haired lover's cheek. Ben stares into George's eyes lovingly, a smile on his lips.
Ben,
The elderly man's brow knits.
Do you ever blame me for all of this?
Why would I? We did this together.
But I knew what might happen. I knew more than you what we were risking.
All I know is that after 39 years, it's hard to fall asleep without you. The situation we've got ourselves in is really fucking with my sleeping patterns.
George wiggles down a bit, clutching Ben more tightly. The older man wraps his arm around his husband and strokes his dark hair. In a well-lit apartment, George leans his hands on a piano. He watches a little girl in a flowered dress play. The girl stares up at George from her bench. He purses his lips.
What happened? I mean, what was that? That's not what we talked about last week.
Interpretation.
Ah, yes. Well, I usually insist that you let the music take you somewhere. Let it surprise you. Even on occasion, let it overwhelm you. Now, that's just as important as knowing the difference between a half step and a semitone. But always, always, you must focus on the instrument you're playing. And listen. Always listen. Listen to what the metronome's telling you. Tick, tock, tick, tock. Follow the rhythm. Follow the rhythm. You can't just create your own rhythm to Chopin. All right, do it again.
George turns away and crosses his arms, his gaze fixed on the floor. Sunlight streams through the window behind him, bathing the room in a thick white glow. The little girl rocks back and forth in time with the music. The expression on her face remains calm and concentrated. His hand to his lips. He stares down toward the floor. George's brow knits as tears well up in his eyes. He brings a hand to his face and strokes his beard, blinking rapidly.
Dear parents, by now you have all heard of my joyful news and of my sad news. To be able to finally marry Benjamin Hull, my partner of almost 40 years, in a small ceremony here in New York, was one of the happiest moments of my life.
George wipes tears from his eyes.
Unfortunately, later I found out that I could no longer continue to teach music at St. Grace's.
A priest writes equations on a chalkboard in a room full of students.
Most of you and everyone at the school knew that I was gay and that Ben was my lifelong partner. I have always had nothing but support from all of you. So I would like to thank you and also to emphasize that I understand that what happened is not the fault of St. Grace's and its leadership.
Teens play basketball in a gym.
Above all, I urge you to take this opportunity to have a conversation with your children about whether or not justice was served here.
Kids sit at lab tables.
The last thing I want them to take from this is that they should hide who they are or what they think if they believe it will get them into trouble.
A boy with glasses looks into a microscope. Teenagers stream into a school hallway. Now George taps his fingers lightly on the piano as the little girl plays.
Life has its obstacles, but I learned early on that they will always be lessened if faced with honesty.
The choir practices.
I believe the world is a better place if people aren't lying. In the words of the Apostle Paul to the Corinthians, love does not delight in injustice, but rejoices with the truth. Yours sincerely, George Galea.
George raises his head and strokes his beard. A sad smile forms on his lips.
Very good.
He nods at her approvingly.
Very good.
The girl gazes up at him. At night in Elliot's apartment, Ben enters the empty kitchen. He notices Elliot and Kate sitting in the living room.
I don't have time to read it. I want to.
But you don't.
Ben walks to Joey's bedroom door.
Hey, can I have some private time, please?
Vlad and Joey stuff books into their backpacks as Ben leaves. The elderly man stares off a minute, then turns toward the living room.
I'm sorry. I don't want to intrude.
No. Why don't you grab a glass and join us for some wine?
Thanks.
How was your day?
Nice. Yeah. George went to church, and I went to see a wonderful movie.
What did you see?
The gang's all here.
You did not.
That?
How could I forget? Hail, hail, the gang's all here. We're all friends together in all kinds of weather.
What is that?
A Busby Berkeley musical. They have this wonderful new print, and I have to say, Elliot, I was so happy when they came out with VHS and we could see all of these old movies again. And I'm glad I showed them all to you, but... But this, seeing it up on the big screen, it's something else. It's not even the same movie.
I'd love to see that.
Let's go tomorrow?
Yes. No, shit. I can't tomorrow.
I'll go on my own.
Ben averts his gaze and shifts in his seat. Elliot sets his glass on the coffee table.
Joey asleep?
I think he and Vlad are still studying.
Vlad?
What's Vlad doing here?
Not studying.
Kate glances over at Elliot.
I think I'll take a look.
No, don't go.
Why not?
Last year, you two were complaining that Joey didn't have any friends. You were so worried that he was too antisocial, you even sent him to see a therapist.
So?
So now he has a friend.
Well, it's a little strange.
There's nothing strange.
It's his only friend, and the guy's a lot older than him.
He's 16. He just looks older.
They're like Yogi Bear and Boo Boo.
Elliot stands and walks over to Joey's bedroom door.
Oh. Good night, Mr. Hall.
Elliot watches as Vlad walks off. Holding the bedroom door open, Elliot peeks into Joey's room and then looks back toward the front door. Later, Ben reads on the bottom bunk. Joey tosses about in the bed above him. Ben sets down his book.
Joey?
Yeah?
You awake?
Uh-huh.
Ben slips off his glasses.
Can I ask you a question?
Joey rolls over.
Yeah?
Have you ever been in love?
I'm not gay.
No. I didn't mean to imply that, Joey.
So what do you mean?
Love. You know what love is.
There was this girl once. We were on vacation in St. Croix. It's in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, I remember when you guys went there.
There was a another family who, they were renting a house on the same beach as us. And they had a daughter. And every morning I would watch her go windsurfing.
Did you go windsurfing too?
No. We had jet skis. But I would watch her from the beach. So one day I saw her watching me, too.
On the jet skis?
Yeah. I saw her looking at me.
Do you know her name?
No. We never even said hello.
Oh.
I think I might see her again, though. Because her and her family, they live in the city, too.
If you do, will you say hello?
Ben sets his book and glasses on the nightstand.
I don't know.
Ben turns off the light. The elderly man removes one of his pillows and lies back.
I think you should.
Ben smiles and rolls over. Joey stares off and considers. The next day, Ben sits in a chair on the roof, staring at the canvas on his easel. He leans forward and rises from his seat, his gaze still fixed on the painting. He daubs some paint onto his brush and mixes a new color. He smears brown paint onto the sketch of the water tower in the distance. Now Ben spreads white paint onto a powder blue background to form clouds. Ben streaks more brown paint onto the canvas, coloring the roof tiles on the half wall next to Vlad's silhouette. Clouds hang in the calm blue sky over a collection of other tall buildings. Ben continues to paint. He stares off past the canvas, squinting his eyes in the bright sunlight. The city stretches out across the horizon beyond the rooftop as the white-haired man works at his painting. Now our view switches to another angle, overlooking nearby rooftops and the water tower. Graffiti adorns one building. It reads, "Avoid always," with an infinity symbol. A bird flies past a red brick building as the light in the sky begins to dim. Shadows stretch across a lone tree between two apartments. A single wispy cloud formation floats in the sky. The sun begins to set, darkening our view of the city. Ben walks over to the stairwell door, his things tucked under one arm. He props the door open with his stool and hobbles into the stairwell. Inside, he sets his canvas against the railing and places his folded chair on the floor. Ben turns and steps out to grab the stool. The easel gets stuck in the door. Tugging hard, he tries to dislodge it. The door swings open and Ben disappears into the stairwell. Our view shifts, looking out over the city as the sun sets. The rooftop stands empty. Now in a hospital, George, Roberto, and Kate gather around a doctor.
The shoulder is a ball and socket joint. The ball of the upper arm bone fits into the socket of the shoulder blade, and it's kept there by the rotator cuff. He had what we call a full thickness tear, or a complete tear.
Did he paint?
No, I don't even want him to comb his hair for a while.
Oh, poor Ben.
And his legs are okay?
Yeah, legs are fine.
Because it was so hard to get him to stand up and move, I thought his leg was broken. It's in a lot of pain.
When was the last time he had a full cardiac checkup?
We have regular checkups every year.
You need to have him see a cardiologist.
Thought he'd just fallen down the stairs.
No, he fainted. Anyway, I don't want to speculate here. I'm an orthopedist. I'm not a cardiologist. All right?
In Elliot's apartment, Kate brings Ben water and pills.
Here.
A sling wraps his arm.
You should take these.
No.
Oh, thank you.
He takes the pills and Kate hands him the water. Ben drinks, then takes the pills.
I have to leave. But there's a plate of pasta for you in the microwave.
Ah, thank you, Kate.
He pats her leg and she stands up.
Are you sure you're going to be all right?
I'll be fine.
Okay, then.
On a city sidewalk, Kate walks with a determined gait. She trots up a set of concrete steps and enters a building. In an office, a middle-aged woman sits behind a desk.
I don't want you to worry too much. It's not a very big deal. We deal with similar problems every day here. But it is serious.
No, I'm just shocked. Joey's such a serious kid, and he's such a good student. And so is Vlad.
Have you noticed any new books in the house?
I haven't been paying attention. I'm trying to finish my own new book, and Elliot's Uncle Ben is staying with us. He's sleeping in Joey's room, so it's a bit of a complicated situation.
Vlad has confessed that he took the books out and gave them to Joey, but your son denies having them.
Vlad seems to have a great influence over my son.
I don't understand why they would steal these books. They're all French literature books.
I have no idea.
At Kate's desk, Ben talks on the phone.
George? No, I'm fine. But after the operation, I think it's better if I go stay with Mindy. You'll come on the weekends.
Joey walks in with his skateboard. He heads straight for his room and shuts the door. Kate arrives and Ben lowers the phone. He watches as she steps into another room. Later, Ben eats at the table.
You're not a boy anymore, son. You're a young man. Do you know how lucky you are this happened to you while you're in high school so the principal could call your mother? Because in the real world, you're in jail right now.
I didn't steal anything.
Hello?
Ben, would you like some more water?
Yes, please.
No, let's just leave it the way it is. I don't want to change anything at this point.
Can we do this later, please?
Yeah, I can't talk right now. I'll call you back in half an hour.
Elliot lowers his phone and sets it on the table.
Thank you.
Kate takes a bite of food and nods to her husband. Elliot looks to his son.
Where were we?
Jail.
Joey stares at Ben.
All right, well, look, there has to be consequences with this here, so... You know that trip to Paris you wanted to go on so bad this fall? You can forget about that.
No, I didn't steal anything.
The principal's lying and you didn't steal the books. What? No. If that's true, then you can just let this be for all the other times I didn't catch you.
Elliot.
What?
Is there something else you want to tell me about?
What do you mean?
I mean, if there's something else going on, Joey, I would rather hear about it from you now than later from the principal or someone else.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about.
Joey, when kids your age steal, there's often drugs involved.
No.
Is Vlad involved with drugs?
Dad, no.
Ben pokes at his food.
Can I help you, Ben?
Fine. It's just a bit challenging maneuvering the silverware, but I'm fine.
You don't sound very sure, Joey. Is he?
Not that I know of.
Not that you know of? You spend every waking minute together. And you know what? I'm going to tell you. The only way my mind can understand how a boy like Vlad is stealing books in the French language as if he was high.
Okay, I'm done. Can I get up, please?
Joey looks at Kate.
Answer me, son.
I don't know! I'm not Vlad! Can I go to my room, please? I still have work to do.
Actually, we're still eating.
It's okay. I'm almost done. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Kate nods to Joey, who stands and heads for his room. Elliot stares at his wife.
Unbelievable.
Kate collects dishes.
You're too nice to him.
She stops momentarily, then stands with the dirty plates.
You don't even know.
Ben watches with a furrowed brow. Elliot stands. At the counter, Elliot and Kate clean up.
I know where the books are.
The couple ignores him. Ben shifts his gaze between them.
I said I know where the books are.
Elliot and Kate turn to the old injured man.
I've been in the house by myself. I was looking around for something to read, and I found these old books under my bed, so I picked one out.
Ben, why didn't you say something?
Well, I didn't think much of it. They were just books.
Are those the books?
The one I picked out was Cyrano de Bergerac. My French is a little rusty, but I got most of it. I know the play.
Frankly, who cares, Ben?
Those are the books.
You've been listening the whole time. You should have said something.
Kate, he didn't know.
Kate looks at Elliot with wide eyes.
Think I'm too nice to Joey?
Please.
Let me tell you, Elliot, you were too nice to your uncle. It's very easy being nice when you are not the one who's around all day.
Kate passes Ben on her way to Joey's room. Elliot follows her, leaving Ben alone at the table. Ben turns to the open door, then looks at his plate.
We're the only ones in that whole stupid school that'll learn French.
At the cop's apartment. Colored lights flash across the walls as Roberto dances with Ted. Doreen sways behind Linda, who holds a beer. Another couple dances near them. On the couch, a woman with her hair in a bun bobs her head. Sitting next to her, George stares off with heavy eyes.
We don't even feel like we live together.
A thin mustached man argues with a curly-haired man on a separate section of the couch. The mustached man stares with an irritated expression, raising his brow as he speaks. The man with curly hair stands. The abandoned man watches the other one leave. He glances around, then stands and walks away. Sitting on the couch, George gazes off with his arms folded over his chest. The curly-haired man navigates through the lively party. Arriving at the couch, he looks around. The curly-haired man takes a seat as dancers sway nearby. He turns to George.
You want a beer?
No, thank you.
I got one from my friend and now I can't find him.
I think he left.
He had an argument. I'm Ian, by the way.
George.
They shake hands.
A friend of Roberto's.
Ian scoots closer.
Who's Roberto?
This is his party, I think.
Oh, right. I don't know anybody here.
Well, that's Roberto over there. He's the one dancing. And the tall, cute one serving the drinks. That's Ted, his boyfriend. They're both cops, if you believe that.
Really, gay cops?
Yeah, we call them the police women. No, it's terrible, really, but no, actually, they're very, very nice guys. So where are you from?
Horsham, originally. Sussex.
Yeah, I'm a South London boy. I came here when I was very young.
I was on my way to dinner with my friend, and he said, let's stop by this party first, and I said, sure, and now he's gone, and... Well, here I am.
You must be hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you said you were going out to dinner, then you came here, and now he's gone. You must be hungry.
Starving, you?
George nods.
Should we go eat?
Right now?
Yeah. I don't have to stay here, do you?
Well, I,
George shifts his gaze.
I'm sorry. You don't even know me. It's just that I hate to eat alone, don't you?
Well, no. On the contrary, I'm never bored with my own company. It's other people who drive me crazy sometimes. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I love people. I'm not very good with crowds. You know, I'd rather meet people one-on-one than stand around with a glass of wine in my hand and a silly grin on my face.
I know what you mean. Are you waiting for someone in particular?
Well, it's not that kind of romantic situation.
So what are you waiting for?
I'm waiting for the orchestra to stop playing, for the curtain to fall.
Are you high?
No. No, actually, before I started talking to you, I was about to fall asleep.
This is not the best place to sleep.
And yet you're sitting on my bed.
Ian furrows his brow.
You're homeless?
Yes. It's a long story. It starts with me
marrying my partner of 39 years and then getting fired from my job and now looking for an apartment that we can afford. I won't bore you with all the details.
Well, I happen to have in my pocket the key to a rent-controlled apartment on Morton Street in the West Village, soon to be vacated.
Ian grins.
It's a long story.
He smiles widely.
Shall we go eat?
Later, they walk through an apartment.
My uncle moved in here in the 70s. So after he went back to England, I got the lease from him.
George glances around the cozy bedroom.
And that was about 8 years ago. I've been very happy here. I love this place.
So why are you moving?
Because of work. I got offered a job at the Anthropology Museum in Mexico City.
Oh, that's an amazing place.
You've been there?
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't get much better than that for an archaeologist.
Ian leaves the bedroom.
Would you like something to drink?
Some water. Thank you.
George follows. Walking through a hallway, he points.
Is that the guy?
Framed photos hang on a wall.
Yeah, John. We've been going out for about a year. I told him about Mexico tonight and he wasn't happy.
You're a heartbreaker.
On the contrary. When I first met him, I was so in love, I didn't want to leave his side. So I think I scared him off a little. He never wanted to commit, really. Kept pushing me away. It's no coincidence that I interviewed for this job in Mexico. Now he finds out that I'm leaving and decides that I'm the man of his dreams. It's so typical and so disappointing, frankly. Do you know how much I pay here?
No idea.
I'm even embarrassed to say $1,400. They can't raise the rent too much. It's controlled by the city.
He hands George the water and sits.
Bless this city.
On stage, a woman plays piano while another holds a violin. An audience watches. Raising her bow, the violinist adjusts her grip on the instrument. Among the spectators, Ben and George watch with somber expressions. George holds a hand to his mouth. Sitting with a man, a short-haired woman watches. A freckled woman sits with her head tilted slightly to the side. A middle-aged gentleman's eyes glisten. A dark-haired man with a mustache looks on impassively. His lips tighten and his eyes well with tears. George reaches over to hold Ben's hand. Ben curls his fingers around his husband's. Ben smiles. Later, Ben and George enter the concert hall lobby.
What did you think of the Vinyasky?
Not bad. I thought she milked it a bit.
You think so?
Well, when the piece is that romantic, there's no need to embellish.
Oh. I don't know. I loved it. I kept thinking about him and his beloved Isabel.
Wait, but that's not true. You know, that whole... He composed it to convince her parents to let him marry her. It's a myth.
I'm not like you. I prefer a little embellishment.
In a bar, a rainbow flag hangs over a crowd. Ben and George wait at a scuffed counter, and a bartender walks over.
Finally.
I'm sorry. Sorry. You guys look very thirsty. What can I get you?
Scotch on the rocks for me, vodka and tonic, half a lime, no ice for the gentleman here. Busy tonight?
It's Friday night.
Kids have taken aspirin.
Good for them.
guys new in the neighborhood?
Are you kidding? There was a famous sip-in right here in this bar to challenge the New York State regulation that prohibited bars from serving homosexuals.
Yeah, we have a clipping from the New York Times framed here somewhere.
1966. Me and four other guys, we came in here accompanied by five reporters. When we were denied service, we denounced the state liquor authority.
Oh, my God. You're that guy?
No, I was one of the guys.
Wow. Well, this round's on me, fellas.
The bartender leaves.
You're such a liar.
What?
You'll do anything for a free drink.
Well, I knew the guy who thought it up.
Did Frank?
Yeah, that was his claim to fame.
Yeah, I thought his claim to fame was something entirely different.
Well, that too. God bless him.
Ben raises his glass.
Here's to Frank's memory.
Frank.
And to Ivan.
Who's Ivan?
The angel from Sussex who got our apartment.
Ian.
Yeah. No, Ivan, Ian, doesn't matter. I drink to him. The handsome stranger.
Ben drinks.
Do I detect a note of jealousy in your voice?
I have wondered what you've been doing your three nights without me.
That's not for me, Ben. You know that.
For all these years.
For all these years.
Amazing.
With a worn expression, Ben shifts his gaze.
I'm sorry I can't say the same to you, George. But at least I've always been honest with you.
Sometimes I think ignorance might be a little better.
I'm sorry, George.
Mind you, come to think of it, there are things that you couldn't have hidden even if you'd wanted to.
What are you talking about?
Like when you got crabs.
Oh, thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, or that guy in Rio who gave you the black eye.
That crazy motherfucker was trying to rob me.
George raises his glass.
Yes. To all the crazy motherfuckers.
All the crazy motherfuckers.
They drink. Setting down his glass, Ben looks at George with a smile. George gazes at his husband. Later, the couple strolls away from us down a narrow, empty street.
George.
What?
Remember we used to go to Castelli and Mary Boone? And you would say, one day we'll go there to see my one-man show.
And we will.
No, we won't, George.
How do you know? Nowadays, there's a new hot painter discovered every week.
Okay, maybe it'll happen, but not in my lifetime.
How do you know? It's all a matter of trends and tastes. You know, a curator will come along and look at one of your paintings and think this is the greatest thing.
But if it doesn't happen, I just would like to know. Is that disappointing to you?
Not at all. And I say it because I think it's a real possibility. I love your paintings. And frankly, I don't care what anybody else thinks.
George and Ben approach an intersection.
I guess I did make a couple of good ones.
They veer onto a sidewalk. The couple steps out of view around a corner, and we linger on the narrow street. On the sidewalk, George and Ben hug.
Oh. You all right? I'm sorry.
They share a grin.
I had a wonderful time.
Me too.
Ben and George lean in for a kiss. They rest their foreheads against each other. Ben steps away.
Good night.
Good night, Georgie.
The Waverly Diner stands on a corner glowing with neon lights. Ben walks toward a subway entrance in front of it. George watches as the older man slowly descends the subway steps. With his hands in his pockets, George walks away. Fade to black. On a bright city sidewalk, two women walk with a small dog. Wearing an open suit jacket, George passes them as he walks toward us. The bearded man strides past a full bike rack and steps off the sidewalk. A truck passes and George crosses the street. On a path between two brick buildings, George steps down a small set of stairs past lush bushes. He rounds the corner of a building and looks up.
George.
Joey. Huh. I didn't see you there.
I was just waiting.
Do you want to come up?
Yeah, sure.
They walk toward the building, inside the new apartment. Joey looks out the window as George enters.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
The teen takes a glass of iced tea and sips it.
This place is so nice.
Yes, thanks. I got lucky.
George stares out the window. He turns his attention to Joey, who sits on the couch. The teen gazes down at his feet. His eyes dart to the bearded man. George sits on the piano bench, his eyes cast downward.
Hey, Uncle George, I'm sorry that I didn't go to the service.
The service?
Uncle Ben's service.
You know, funerals can be strange. Especially for people your age.
George smiles at the boy, then looks down at his glass of tea.
I wanted to remember Uncle Ben how I remember him now. And I'd never been to a funeral before or anything, and I was afraid that if I went to his, that's how I would remember him whenever I thought about him.
That makes a lot of sense to me, Joey. But I hope you didn't come all this way just because you felt guilty about it.
Oh, no, actually, no.
The teen rises.
Actually, came to give you something.
He carries over a large object wrapped in brown paper and sets it on an ottoman. As he folds back the paper, he reveals Ben's painting of Vlad on the rooftop. George brings a hand to his face and strokes his beard.
Wow, that's nice. That's very nice.
He picked it up from the top of the stairs the day that Uncle Ben had his accident. Everything came down, including Uncle Ben, as you know. But the painting was like...
Yeah. You know, I think he... I think he saved it mid-fall somehow. His paintings meant everything to him.
A smile flits across the boy's face. He nods. George's brow furrows.
Is this the view from your roof?
Yeah, that's west.
George takes the painting to the window.
Is this you in it?
No.
Oh, I didn't think so.
That's my friend Vlad. He used to come over a lot when Uncle Ben was living with us.
Are you sure you don't want this? It'd be a great memento.
Oh, no. No, you keep it. It's his last painting. It's unfinished. If you look over here, you can always imagine what he would have done with the colors.
It's very nice.
Joey slips his hands into his pockets.
I'm going to find a hammer, and you can help me hang it up on the wall.
Yeah, sure.
George walks off. Joey stares after him. Now in the stairwell outside the apartment, Joey carries his skateboard down the steps. He reaches a landing, and a woman passes him.
Here you go.
Stopped in the corner on the landing by a small window with trees outside, Joey clutches his skateboard and stares down at the floor. His chest rapidly rises and falls. Unmoving from the corner, he begins to softly cry. He shuts his eyes tightly and screws up his face. Joey brings a hand to his forehead and rubs at his eye. Outside the window, cars pass by. The arm gripping the skateboard drops limply at his side. Joey lifts it to his chest. Joey rubs at his forehead, then stares out the window. Composes himself and pushes off from the wall, continuing down the stairs. Our view lingers in the empty stairwell. Outside, lush ivy adorns the walls of a large red brick building. Inside the apartment, with his back to us, George faces the painting on the wall. He steps away. Our view remains on the unfinished canvas. Carrying a skateboard, Joey walks across the street past the full bicycle rack. He approaches a pretty young girl holding her own skateboard. He kisses her on the lips. They separate and step off the curb together, chatting. Placing their skateboards on the asphalt, they step onto them, pushing off with one foot. The two teens stare off as they roll down the tree-lined street side by side. The deep yellow glow of the setting sun shines through the trees, bathing the teens in light. Joey's attention drifts several times to the young girl beside him, and a brief smile crosses his lips. The setting sun silhouettes the young couple in its warm glow. Sachs and Mauricio Zacharias. Alfred Molina. John Lithgow. Darren Burroughs. Charlie Tahan. Cheyenne Jackson. Manny Perez. Christina Kirk. Tank Burt, Christian Coulson, John Cullum, Harriet Harris, Adrian Lennox, Jason Stewart, and Marissa Tomei. Love is Strange. Produced by Lucas Joaquin, Jay Van Hoy, Lars Knutson, Ira Sachs, Jane Baron Sherman. Executive producers Blythe Robertson, Ali Betil, Abraham Brown, Marcy Feller, Gabby Hanna, Christos V. Constantinopoulos. Executive producers Jim A. Lande, Elika Portnoy, Lorenzo Santana, Jim Stevens, Rodrigo Tecera, Laura Teodosio. Associate producers Steve Ballerini, Mayank Botter, Sally Blue, Colin Borer, Monica Ball, Dan Fourier, Jason Jamie Lee,
Ellen Caroline Marks, Joe Delamonica, Tracy Scott Nadler, Al Perinella, Melissa Pinsley, Hugh Schultz, Henry Van Ameringen, Director of Photography, Christos Voudouris, Production Designer, Amy Williams, Editor, Afonso Gonsalves, Michael Taylor, Music Supervisor, Susan Jacobs, Costume Designer, Aryun Basson, Casting, Avi Kaufman, Unit Production Manager, Line Producer, Allison Rose Carter, First Assistant Director, Chris Carroll, Second Assistant Director, Keith Marlin. Credits roll. Cast in order of appearance. John Lithgow as Ben. Alfred Molina as George. Tatiana Zbirovskaya as Zlata. Olya Zueva as Eugenia. Jason Stewart as Officiant. Darren Burroughs as Elliot. Marissa Tomei as Kate. Charlie Tahan as Joey. Harriet Harris as Honey. Cheyenne Jackson as Ted. Manny Perez as Roberto. Christina Kirk as Mindy. John Cullen as Father Raymond. Eric Tabak as Vlad. Tank Burt as Doreen. Daphne Gaines as Linda. Christopher King as Lawyer. Marianne Urbano as Social Worker. David Bell as David. Henry Crouch as Henry. Jeff Goat as Jeff. Sebastian Lacaz as Marco. Duffy Lepore Curran as Piano Student. Iris Spalding as Choir Teacher. Andrew Polk as Doctor. Adrian Lennox as Principal. Christian Coulson as Ian. Jim Newman as Ian's Boyfriend. Rico Higuma as Pianist. Julia Maynard as Violinist. Michael J. Berg as Bartender. Anahi Vidal as Girl. Production Supervisor John Reed. Music Editor Susanna Peric. Script Supervisor Veronica Lupu. Ben's Paintings by Boris Torres. Assistant Music Supervisors Kevin Rich Forrester, Jackie Mulhern. Key Production Assistant Felix Berrios. First Team PA Peter Westervelt. Paperwork PA Laura Albin. Utility PA Esteban Aparicio. Set PA Chris Kelly, Trey Pence. Additional PA Ben Fetterman. Music, Berceuse in D-flat major, Opus 57, written by Frédéric Chopin, performed by Idel Barret. Baby, You've Got What It Takes, written by Clyde Otis and Murray Stein, performed by Alfred Molina, John Lithgow, and Martin Wind. Canto Domino, written by Giuseppe Pitoni, performed by the Trinity Youth Chorus. Prelude No. 15 in D-flat, Opus 28, Raindrop, written by Frédéric Chopin, performed by Duffy Curran. Piano Sonata No. 28, written by Ludwig von Beethoven, performed by Idel Barret. Waltz No. 7 in C-sharp minor, Opus 64, No. 2, written by Frédéric Chopin, performed by Idel Barret. Ballad No. 3 in A-flat major, Opus 47, written by Frédéric Chopin, performed by Idel Barret. Mi Familia, written by Adrian Quesada and Skinny Williams. Suite im Alten Stil No. 3 Minuet, written by Alfred Schnittke, performed by Ralph Gathoni and Mark Lubotsky. Hail, Hail, The Gang's All Here, written by Theodora Morse and Arthur Sullivan, performed by John Lithgow and Darian E. Burroughs. Nocturne No. 8 in D-flat major, Opus 27, written by Frédéric Chopin, performed by Idel Barret. Fiesta Latina, written by N.A. Alvarez, performed by Cubanito. Coco Iron, written by Daniel Indart, performed by Daniel Indart. Legend, Opus 17, written by Henrik Vinyaski, performed by Rico Higuma and Julia Maynard. That's Him Over There, written by Marilyn Bergman and Louis Spence, performed by Nina Simone. Nocturne No. 5 in F-sharp major, Opus 15, written by Frédéric Chopin, performed by Idel Barret. Berceuse in D-flat major, Opus 57, arranged for piano and orchestra, written by Frédéric Chopin, performed by the Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character, or history of any actual persons living or dead is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States of America and other countries, and its unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Copyright Levis Strange, LLC, 2014. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Sony Pictures Classics, read by Gailey Heidemann. For more information about Motion Picture Access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org.